Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, March the 5th.
Yay.
62nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, CPA, except for 45 minutes a month, Bill McCauley.
Hey, Brian.
That's when he's celebrity media star Bill McCauley.
That really shows up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now you haven't been locked in and chained down long enough yet to buy that line, huh?
No, not yet.
Uh-oh, what is that?
Oh, California.
Tax beater.
Yeah.
Oh, letter. Letter, sorry, not better.
Yeah, tax beater. That's what we feel like.
Yeah, trying our best. So we'll talk about some of the stuff that's going on at the state, some of the stuff that's going on at the federal. We'll find out if Bill knows what day it is or what month it is when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon. KINS, News and Information Time. What do we say? It's around 4 o'clock-ish?
It's after lunch.
Yeah, okay. 3:13, we're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. But before we do, let's see, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Oscar Wilde.
Let's go with Oscar Wilde.
I have the simplest tastes. I am always satisfied with the best. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is simple. You break it down that way. Sort of.
Simply stated. No. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. So, do you want to talk about more tax stuff, or do you want to talk about the impact of sequestration or what you're seeing and hearing and feeling? Economic things. I mean,
well,
the table is
wow,
so full.
Look at that. Usually, you don't give me this kind of latitude.
I know.
This is kind of.
I figured you're about as dingy as I am today. So
a little intimidating. There are a few things that are tax topical right now. Obviously, everybody's this is the season, and tax returns are being filed with alarming regularity, if you
will. Are all the programs dialed in from the IRS?
Finally.
Finally, as of like last week, finally?
As of Sunday, the IRS said they were going to open up their e-file system to all forms. And then Monday they tested with the major software vendors. And then this morning, our software vendor, as an example, gave us an update. We were able to upload an update. That might be redundant. Install an update that enabled us to basically file all individual income tax
returns. So game on now.
Yeah. And so it's not that we haven't been preparing returns. We just haven't been able to file a lot of them, which has meant that people's refunds have been delayed and other things along those lines. So that's kind of a significant date because we're starting to clear some backlog of returns that have been completed but haven't been able to be totally resolved and
so you're saying the
office
has got a lot of stuff to do in the next little bit at the scanning machine, huh?
The office is busy. So and I'm sure the IRS's computers are are getting a lot of information sent to them at once. So that's really good news from a preparer perspective. You know, it's been a frustrating season as a preparer because you'll complete a return, but then you'll get some diagnostics that indicate this thing can't be filed yet because the IRS is not accepting this form.
So it sits on your desk instead of being.
So and the IRS will begin to accept these forms sometime in late February, early March, which is what they did. But nonetheless, it's still been a little herky jerky, and you know there have been, you know, as we've gone along, there've been a couple of times where the IRS has allowed certain forms to go, so some of the returns we had backlog we could get through, but it's just indicative of it's what's going to happen is when you have a tax law that's dated January 1. It's just not – there's not enough time for everybody to get up and running in that window. And so that is – the good news is we're past that part of it, and this next month's going to be a next month and a half is going to be a scramble, mad scramble.
Well, don't forget the Postal Department delivering all this stuff except
– Well, a lot of returns – the IRS has mandated e-filing for people who prepare over a certain number of tax returns. So most preparers are mandated e-filers. So you have to e-file in general.
So if somebody wanted to use a paper, they couldn't use your
They case? Can. They have to fill out a form and indicate why they don't want to e-file.
Really? So they have to defend the position.
Well, no, they just have to...
Trying to employ my postman.
They have to identify. Exactly, exactly. Yeah, we want to keep Freddie busy. So,
or at least awake most times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the good news is that there's not... The tax filing... I don't think the paper returns make as big an impact on the system because the IRS has been very successful in moving towards electronic filing, and so you're seeing more and more. You know, I think the numbers go up every year, and that's from the IRS's perspective, that's a good thing.
What percent have electronic refunding?
Well, you have a choice, you know, when you file your return, you have a choice to provide information that will enable a direct deposit of the refund or to have the deposit issued in the form of a check. A check comes slower. So if a person is getting a refund, there is incentive to use the direct deposit system. And in order to do that, you have to tell the IRS three things. What kind of account is it? A checking or savings or some other type of investment account? What's the routing number for your financial institution? And what's your account number? And that information all goes in the tax return for a direct deposit. And I don't know what the actual percentages are, to get to your original question, with regard to how many people choose to have a direct deposit as contrast with receive a check for their refund. But I do think it's clearly a growing percentage is gaining more. What's happened is it's taken a while for people to get comfortable with the changes in how this system works as contrasted with the old one.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spare new to their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley.
You never know what goes on when the microphones are dead.
Yeah. And they were dead, right?
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. Well, we'll know by the caller volume in the next couple of moments. Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of, I'll forget it. Reminds me of the old live football broadcast days.
Oh, yeah.
Learned a valuable lesson. Never assume the mic's dead.
Oh, hell, yeah. Of course, obviously, we abide by that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You realize it was like 25 years ago?
That was a long time ago.
Wow.
That was, yeah. We had more hair.
We had more on top and less in the middle.
Less in the middle.
And seem to have known a heck of a lot more than what we do today.
Oh, huh? I know. And we used to eat more then, too.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
As you're looking at some of the tax stuff that's going on, Bill, are you seeing any trends or are some of the concerns that you'd expressed in December, the lack of lead time for preparation or for maneuvering or for action or lack of action? Are any of those starting to have impact?
Yeah, there's been some challenges. I think first thing is that the new law that was passed January 1 was probably more taxpayer friendly than I expected, and so I think that my worst fears from a taxpayer perspective are probably not being realized simply because I think that what the law that was passed for 2013 and a few things were retroactive for 2012, I think for the large, on balance, are more taxpayer friendly than not.
Are your medium fears being realized?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think that there's going to be some interesting challenges. If you look as an example for California, I think there's some real valid concern in California about whether or not we're gonna, California has ceased to be a very taxpayer friendly state for people who make much money.
Really?
It's empirical. It's not just. I think we throw this stuff around, but it's empiric. You can establish it empirically that California is not a taxpayer friendly state when it comes to, particularly comes to higher earners.
Yeah.
And the question we have, and of course, there are different people have different perspectives. Some people say, well, that doesn't really matter, that the higher earning taxpayers will just want to stay in California because it's California. And there's lots of reasons why we Californians would want to stay in California. That been said, there are now more reasons than there used to be for somebody to consider, is there another way I can structure myself or my life to mitigate to some degree the increasing tax burden that's associated with being in California. Some of that's just we've had an increase in federal tax burden that's going to be impacting 2013. So when you put them all together, it's fair to say that a high income Californian might have been before January 1, 2013, might have been taxed at effective rate in the mid to high four, mid, so let's say mid 40s would be the top end. Somebody might get, their tax burden might be 44-45%, something like that would be kind of the top end. Now it's you can run numbers where you could see it would be easy for somebody to actually be 51-53%. So, and that's just income tax. That's just our.
There's no sales property.
No, that's just vehicle. That's just collections through the income tax system. So when you start to factor those kinds of things in, you begin to realize that, there is a burden on higher income taxpayers in California, and there is a likelihood that a certain percentage of them will leave here. And I know of some who have said, forget it. I'm going to go and take up residence somewhere else. What's that going to do for the state of California and its budgets? I mean, I know that as an example in December, the state was very excited because there were some really, really, encouraging, tax collections. But part of that was because people were triggering transactions in fear of what the 2013 tax rates were going to be. And I don't know that it's healthy or wise to assume that those revenue levels are going to stay constant or be repeated on a regular basis, from the standpoint that people are not going to be so incentivized probably in the coming year to trigger more transactions that result in tax in higher tax obligations.
Housing values. Heard this morning that housing value has raised about 10% over the last year. National. LA is one of those that's seeing it. San Francisco, I think, is number three in the country or something. It's up like 15% year over year. If real estate starts moving again, does that throw a different wrinkle into this equation for planning purposes?
Well, real estate is obviously for most people who of wealth, that a component of their wealth is tied up in real estate. And when I say people of wealth, I mean people with assets of, there's a lot of people who have, a home and a retirement account and whatever, and actually by the world standards are very wealthy. But real estate values changing, the downturn in real estate value had a real nasty effect on things, and an uptick would be interesting.
That would be a positive, interesting. KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
This is Fred Van Vleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:36. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, some of the tax filing elements, is there anything new into the equation this year, particularly now that everything is kind of a semi-known factor coming out of Washington and, dare I say, Sacramento? Are there any new things that we have to pay attention to? Are you seeing any trends of people neglecting, overlooking, not having certain bits and pieces?
Well, one of the things that a person needs to be careful with is if you've got students, you've got kids who are in college and they're incurring expenses for school. There are still several different programs out there that are available for people depending on their income level to get some tax benefit. There's a tuition deduction. There's also the American Opportunity Tax Credit that is available. And these things, they kind of require optimizing. You kind of have to look and say, okay, what if I take the tuition deduction? What does that get me? What happens if I take the credit and see which one ends up having the best tax benefit for you? The thing that is changed there, and the most significant thing in terms of just preparing a tax return, is that you now have to schools will send out a form called a 1098-T, and it includes information about tuition, scholarships that were paid, et cetera. And there's some important boxes on that 1098-T. It'll also indicate whether the student was more than half-time student or not. And so,
does that mean hours in the classroom or hours enrolled,
Brian,
for the classroom?
Brian, we're not talking about when you were in school.
Yeah. God, the kid's going to eight classes. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
per quarter.
So the good news is that it's not that difficult to comply, but you definitely want to keep that 1098-T that comes from the school, because there's information on it you need to use to complete the education tax credit forms, et cetera, including the name of the school and its address and
coding.
Yeah,
because
you didn't used to have to indicate where you went to school. You just had to indicate that you went to school and you incurred tuition. Now they're trying to do some matching and match up the tuition with the tuition statement from the school. So just be aware that you need to keep that 1098-T and use that when you make those calculations. And that's kind of an easy one to overlook, and it can, you know, in turn bite you kind of in the butt.
The address or the form?
Well, just that you need that form and that there's additional information. But
I got everything except for the street number right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to pop up on a pretty darn regular basis.
Yeah. Write this check.
Yeah. Now, for educational costs, are high school tuition fees or private school tuition fees also recognized?
Not for purposes of the tuition deduction or for the American Opportunity Tax Credit. You can, however, include for the American Opportunity Tax Credit, you can include books that you acquire from the school. Now, this is an interesting one because most schools, as an example, if you think of Humboldt State, they have a bookstore, but it's operated, I believe, by University Center, which is not from the school. It's at the school, but it's not operated by the school. So that's a little tricky one that semantically can cross people up. But if, as an example, you're going to a technical school and you have to buy a curriculum from the technical school, that curriculum can be taken into account for that American Opportunities Tax Credit if it's acquired from the school, and that's where you have to get.
But if you buy the same textbook from Amazon?
No, it doesn't qualify for that purpose.
What about board?
Are you referring to our listeners?
Room and board. Now, if there's a meal plan through the school, I would imagine that would be covered. Is that necessarily the case?
When you say covered, what do you mean by that?
Included in the T form.
Yeah, the reality is that it's not, that room and board is not tuition and is not treated like tuition.
So T is for tuition.
Tuition payments. And so the tuition and certain books and supplies qualify for the American Opportunities Tax Credit. The tuition deduction, interestingly, is tuition, not for room and board. So you're going to see that room and board is not as tax advantaged as the tuition payments.
It is treated differently, but it's still something to track?
In general, no. It's not going to.
Really?
You're not going to get benefit for the tuition for the room and board.
If you're a dependent. Or they are dependent of ours.
I wish.
Does that? Is there any recognition of that, or is that just kind of included in the 2,000 or whatever it is for having a kid?
That's it. That it is part of their dependency exemption. So those room and board costs are not going to tax advantage you.
With your tuition, you want to push that one. That's an argument if you're going to a certain schools. If you can wrap it into one single thing?
Potentially. I don't know. Most of the schools will break it down.
Oh, yeah. Darn. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:42. You know, you try to get things simple, and it just doesn't fly.
Well, it's people like you they try to work rules for, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Now, we do, in theory, have you on the 2nd of April.
That is a theory.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, the last years, I typically will get that email around the 28th or 29th of March saying, psst.
Yeah.
So whether or not you hear on the tooth or not,
yeah,
what are some of the things at this point? Is there still enough time if you're going to be going through a preparer to have somebody else help you out? Is it time to start thinking extensions? If so, what are the differences? How would you suggest?
Yeah. There's undoubtedly still time to get help with preparation if you need it. I wouldn't wait too long because most of us are trying, you know, like most of the CPA community I can speak for tends to serve a consistent clientele, and we are going to prioritize our existing clients to some degree simply because, you know, we respect the relationship. And anybody, if I've overspoken my bounds, then somebody can correct me, I'm sure.
They're coming back next year, so they are higher on the total pool.
Yeah, and they came back from the year before. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we would encourage relationship. But, you know, there are preparers who are probably more transactional in nature and probably, you know, we're more interested, you know, happy to do one return and maybe see what happens in the future. So you know, it just depends on what your needs are. The thing about getting going is if you don't get going soon, you know, that once things get towards the end of March, it gets very difficult to, you know, to get in and see somebody in most cases to get help. It'd be my perspective.
Your perspective.
My perspective.
Okay. Is there anything negative about filing an extension?
No, I don't think so. The thing that you should remember if you're going to file an extension is that the extension provides additional time to file. It does not provide additional time to pay. So if you owe tax, it should be paid, and a reasonable estimate of that tax should be paid with your extension at April 15th. And so that kind of means that you need to at least do a rough tax return to figure out, okay, what, you know, where do I stand and how much should I pay? Sometimes it's relatively easy. You look and say, every year I'm overpaid and nothing's changed. Well, you might infer, hey, I probably have enough paid by my withholding or however I made my payments, and I can probably get an extension.
Send $50 just to be safe, kind of thing.
You might, depending on your situation. And the other thing would be is if you're paying estimated tax payments, you know, you pay quarterly, even if you have paid in enough to cover your tax, you might want to pay a first quarter estimate or at least pay in an amount with your extension that you could apply to the first quarter to make sure that you are not going to be penalized for underpayment of estimated tax for 2013.
If you get halfway close, is that okay? Let's say you didn't think you were going to pay and you end up having to pay $150.
Mm-hmm.
Does that trigger a penalty, or
yeah, there's a
is
penalty.
That close enough?
There's a penalty for being short, and so
a dollar or $100,000, it's kind of the same.
Yeah, and so there is a penalty, but it's not. I mean, if you owed $150, it's not going to be a major problem. If you owed $150,000, that's going to be a bigger, you know, exponentially bigger or a geometrically bigger number. You know, you want to be able to look at that and say, all right, I understand the scope has changed, and I would owe, if I owe more, the penalty and interest is going to be a greater number.
Estimate as best as you can. Talk to your guy, have him estimate, or gal, okay, fine.
Your preparer.
I see. You've been talking to people again. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Join us tomorrow for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Have some windows. See you tomorrow.